genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brain.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Ah, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turn now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. You can catch us live every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock, or you can hear us streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura County. If all of that sounds like National Public Radio, well, you're getting the idea. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is NPR done right. If you want to join in the conversation or talk to one of our guests, you can always call us at 639-0008. Or if you're outside of the area code, it's area code 805-639-0008. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is potpourri. All of my guests have interesting subjects, no two of which are related to one another. My first guest is a venture capitalist and has a strong record of successful technology startups. He excelled in leadership and operating roles at several high-growth companies and now has his own CEO advisory practice in the Bay Area. We'll discuss what leaders need to know to be unusually excellent. My second guest believes there's a legal drug cartel in this company comprised of Goldman Sachs, the media conglomerates, billionaire industrialists. This cartel is backing risky new drugs and deadly vaccines. She'll blow the whistle on their efforts to discredit existing natural antibodies and vaccine alternatives from her documentary, Pharma Whores. My third guest is a member of the political royalty in this United States. Few families have had the impact on American politics that his family has had. His family name ranks right up there with other American political dynasties, including the Adams, the Roosevelts, the Kennedys, and the Bushes. We'll talk to Adlai Stevenson III about his family's enduring legacy and American politics in general. And as always, if you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. John Hamm is an advisor to leaders of all types of organizations worldwide. He has a diverse background in as an operating executive, a startup CEO, a venture capital investor, a leadership coach, and an advisory board member to dozens of technology companies. John was named a top 100 venture capitalist of the United States for the year 2009 by AlwaysOn.com. Prior to that, John was managing director and partner with Jeff Moore at TCG Advisors, where he advised CEOs and executive teams in the areas of leadership, systems, strategy, executive teamwork, etc. The companies John has been associated with reads like a who's who of fast-growing companies: Redpoint Ventures, Brocade, Affinity Labs, Webify, Ironport Systems, TaylorMade, Adidas Golf, and McAfee, as well as Spanion. John started his professional career at Hewlett-Packard in Palo Alto, California. He holds a BS degree in engineering from Purdue University in engineering physics and engineering management, and he's completed over a dozen postgraduate educational and personal development coaching courses and workshops. John, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Thank you, Bill. I'm pleased to be with you. Appreciate it.
It's a pleasure to have you on board the show. I always enjoy talking to thought leaders in business, particularly when it comes to high tech, because that's where all the action is this day. So let's start by looking over your career. You've been remarkably successful in your career. Your business degree that I just enumerated for people really speaks volumes. You've managed all of this success by being excellent as a leader. So as a successful leader, don't you find it noteworthy that other leaders, both inside and outside of high tech, don't understand the value of exceptional leadership?
I do find it odd and troubling in some ways, not completely surprising in others. I mean, the truth is that we don't invest in training leaders. We assume that they just know what to do because they're smart people. And, you know, if you think about it, the person who fixes the plumbing in your house has a lot more formal training to do what they do than most leaders. So it's on one level not terribly surprising that neither the appreciation for nor the sort of attention to the credentials and the training is a little lacking. I mean, we really do expect leaders to just know how to lead, and yet we really don't give them a lot of the tools and the plays to run. So I think there's a lot of opportunity in all businesses to start treating leadership as a real professional competency.
Well, and I think that that is a worthwhile ambition, and I like the fact that you're taking charge with this book that you've written to do that. The book is called Unusually Excellent, The Necessary 9 Skills Required for the Practice of Great Leadership. But, John, I mean, you're saying that a lot of that burden, a lot of that responsibility falls on the companies. I would agree with that to some degree, but I'd also say the leaders themselves have to take some responsibilities as well. As you move up in leadership positions, shouldn't it also become part of your training, or at least part of your mindset, to become more of a leader?
Well, Bill, I'm actually in violent agreement with you. I actually think it is the leader's personal responsibility, and he or she should not count at all on their organization. I do believe that leaders can take personal responsibility and have a real plan to increase their competence in leadership. Part of the reason I wrote this book is after advising 60, 70, 80 leaders over the last 7 or 8 years, I began to see the same patterns of breakdown, the same patterns of lack of knowledge, the same patterns of sort of where your intuition and your common sense would fail in a complex leadership situation. So I agree with you. Organizations, spend some amount of time in quote-unquote leadership development, but the truth is leadership competency is a personal commitment.
I like that. We're talking to John Hamm, everybody. And John, you write that the core of exceptional leadership is trust. And we're right now in an age where populism has turned people's focus really against business. So what do you mean by trust, and how can a leader hope to capture the trust of his or her employees and followers when the popular culture is inundated against them?
Well, I think, leadership, like human nature, we all sort of know in our guts what works. And we know that trust is the basis for almost all of our willingness to do something that someone else wants us to do. So the fact is, when trust breaks down, our willingness to be led really breaks down with it. We might go along in a compliance way. We might, be willing to do it because we need to put food on the table for our families.
Mm-hmm.
But when you really look at exceptional leadership, leadership that would have more of almost a volunteer kind of flavor to it, that's really based on us believing that that leader's goals and values and objectives are aligned with ours, that in fact they have our self-interest in mind, not just theirs or the organization.
All right, we're talking to John. I'm sorry, John, I didn't mean to talk over you there.
No, I apologize. When trust breaks down, leadership credibility breaks down right with it.
No, that makes perfect sense. We're talking to John Hamm, the author of the book, Unusually Excellent. And, John, I find it interesting. You deal with so many high-tech startup companies, and you've dealt, as you say, with over 80 different leaders, and you see patterns recurring again and again and again with these leaders. So talk to me about the three things that really help to build a leader's credibility based on all of the people that you've consulted with over the years.
Yeah, thank you. And it is really based on all of the people. I really looked at a large sample size and asked myself, what were the absolute recurring themes of credibility? And there were really three behaviors that I noticed as absolutely non-negotiable in leaders establishing credibility. They really had to be authentic. They had to give people a real sense of who they were, be vulnerable, be open-minded to people knowing who they really were, not play the part, not run the facade, but really actually be available to the folks they wish to follow them. So authenticity was a big deal. The second thing we just touched on, which was they had to be trustworthy. The fact is that people want to feel safe when they're in an organization or when they're being led by someone. And trust is really about safety. It's really about knowing that there's not going to be arbitrary consequences or arbitrary, negative consequences to your actions. And the third part, frankly, is that we want people to be compelling. I mean, being authentic and being trustworthy makes for a good friend, but not necessarily someone you'd be willing to follow. So that third leg in the stool of leadership credibility, in other words, earning the right to lead, is being compelling, having a big commitment and a vision and something somebody wants to be part of, a cause that someone wants to join. So being authentic, being trustworthy, being compelling.
Authentic, trustworthy, compelling. Let's talk a little bit more, if we can, dive into the compelling part, John, because a lot of people in the Silicon Valley have these big dreams. Yes, I'm going to change the world. I'm going to change the way people communicate. I'm going to change the way in which we deliver X, Y, Z, and so forth. Aren't there just any number of compelling ideas up in the Silicon Valley, and people are looking to get them out there? How do you know, or how can a leader really communicate that not only is his idea both compelling, but it's also doable at the same time?
Well, I think there's two aspects to this. Number one is the idea compelling. Number two is the person compelling. And I think that we've all been around people we felt were compelling. I mean, the feeling you get when you're around somebody compelling is it actually, you want to act. You don't just want to know. You want to get off the couch. You want to join them. So we have lots of compelling ideas. We have fewer compelling people. And, you know, big ideas are sort of a dime a dozen, but really compelling human beings that you'd want to, you know, forsake all other options for and go with on that cause or that campaign. Those people are a little less common than big ideas. So I think when somebody makes a personal decision to invest their time and energy, they're as much compelled by the nature of that human being and the size of their commitment and their spoken credibility and whether you really believe they can pull it off or not.
And I suppose
a dime a dozen, people are not.
I suppose that's what makes those leaders unusually excellent. We're talking to John Hamm, whose book is coincidentally titled Unusually Excellent. So, John, threes seem to be a recurring theme. Your book is also divided into three parts. So go ahead and tell us about the three parts that your book has, because they lead one right into the other.
They do. And in fact, it's research knowledge that we know that human beings really digest things in threes quite well. So the book is divided into three sections. The first part we've just talked about is called The Right to Lead, or Credibility. And it has three little sections to it we just mentioned. The middle third of the book is really moving from credibility to competence. So the quick way of describing this is you can like your doctor all you want, and you can find that person to be trustworthy and compelling and authentic. But when you're under general anesthesia, you actually need them to be competent, which is the middle part of the book. Competence is around leading people, strategy and execution in a skills-based orientation, and it really earns respect. Credibility really earns the right to lead. But the middle of the book is based on competence, being good at what you do. And then the third section of the book is really around what I call legacy or consequence, meaning what are you leaving behind as a leader, and would you rather lead today with an awareness of how you might be judged in time? It will actually get you to do things a little bit better if you believe that they'll be judged on the long watch of time, you know, because we can do the same thing and we can do it well or not so well or poorly. And it matters how we do things, not just what we do.
All right. So credibility, competence, and consequences. John, I'm going to drill down a little bit more on competence. And you use
Sure.
the idea of a doctor, which I thought was a great analogy. But here's the thing. Yes, a competence is how you earn respect. However, how do you train or how do you prepare a leader to lead in times of great stress? Because, you know, unless you're feeling the great stress, you don't know how you're going to react or how competent you're going to be under those circumstances.
Well, I think it's like any other sort of performance sport. You have to be tested under pressure. You have to know, you know, whether you're a professional golfer or a surgeon or a photographer with that, you know, that moment where they need to get the picture. I mean, we do need to train ourselves to behave, you know, to be able to perform under pressure and stress. It comes from practice. You know, it comes from knowing what to do and then practicing under those. The good news about leadership is we get hundreds and hundreds of transactions every day or week to practice on. Now, the ones that you just mentioned, the ones under higher stress or higher pressure, you know, those kind of come unexpectedly. But what really the issue is with regard to performing under pressure is having trust in yourself that you know what to do. You know, if you don't know what to do, that'll be the first thing that breaks down when the pressure heats up a little bit. So, you know, the competence area is really a matter of skills, really understanding, getting some information, you know, having somebody coach or train you in what are the leadership issues around people, what are the leadership issues around strategy or making plans, and what are the leadership issues around driving execution, producing results. So that pressure comes, and it comes to people who are all, at all different skill levels. And obviously, the higher skill and the more practice you have, the more competent and confident you're going to feel under pressure. So it's really a game of learning how to perform under pressure based on trust of your skill set.
All right. We're talking to John Hamm, author of the book Unusually Excellent. And, John, you're involved in the high-tech world up there in Silicon Valley. Whether you're creating a new product or new service, inevitably you're talking about leading change. Leading change is a specialty skill. It's a special type of skill. What makes leading change both challenging and rewarding if it's done properly?
Well, I think leading change is a big, big topic area. There's a couple nuggets about it. The first thing is really just to realize that the vast majority of people just don't enjoy change. They don't enjoy rapid change. We're all creatures of habit, and we have our comfort zones, and you know, we don't like to change things very quickly. It puts us all in sort of a discomfort or a position where we don't feel as confident as we'd like to. However, change is inevitable. It's necessary for innovation. It's necessary for competitive advantage. So as a leader, you know, understanding that when we introduce a lot of change into a group of human beings, we're likely to get the natural resistance and the natural fear that comes up. It's a natural part of it. No reason to resist it. Just work with it. But change can be very exciting to people if they understand what's in it for them. Most of the time when we don't want to change, it's because we don't understand what's in it for us. And I think that leaders want to communicate, hey, we need to change, but here's why. And here's what we could create if we were willing to change. So part of the change management leadership dialogue is making sure that people understand why we do that. What's the context? What's the meaning? What's the purpose? And that's a communication that many leaders just aren't, they just don't value as much as they should, because it's clear to them. They just need to make it clear to others.
And I think that that's good advice. John, if people are interested in what you have to say, they like the sound of your voice, they want to learn more about you or your book, Unusually Excellence, The Necessary 9 Skills Required for the Practice of Great Leaderships, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Well, the good news is my website is the name of my book. It's unusuallyexcellent.com, all one word. And it's available at all the national retailers, all the bookstores, all the online sites. And there's some info on the website. But I think there's something in this book for everyone that cares about leadership at any level.
Well, and certainly you have poured your heart into this all of the years that you have trained leaders in the Silicon Valley. Thank you so much, John, for being our guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
It was my pleasure. Thanks, Bill.
Take care.